The following Dharma discourse was given by Jeffrey Shugen Arnold at Zen Mountain Monastery. Shugen Roshi is the head of the Mountains and Rivers Order and abbot of the monastery. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you would like to make a donation or find out more about our various programs, visit us online at zmm.org. Thank you for listening.
Master Dogen taught the first of 120 questions in the Guidelines for Zen Monasteries says, do you revere Buddha Dharma and Sangha or not? Thus it is clear that what the Buddhas and ancestors in India and China have authentically transmitted is reverence for Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. Without taking refuge, there is no reverence. Without reverence, there's no taking refuge. The act of taking refuge in Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha is achieved through mutual affinity and interaction. Whether you're in a deva realm, a human realm, a hell realm, a demon realm, or an animal realm, when you have mutual affinity and interaction with Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, you invariably take refuge in them. So, good morning. We're finishing our Bodhidharma session. Also during the week, Gokan Osho was in Denkai transmission. It's a week long, began very early on Monday morning and concluded, actually it's not over yet. there's a little bit that happens after the talk. And as I mentioned before, some weeks back, the nature of this harkens back to the story of Huanong and his teacher Hongren, where Hongren came to the rice shed late at night, just the two of them, transmitted the Dharma, and then he left. Huanong left. And so it's conducted in a darkened room, closed off from the Sangha in private, only the teacher and the Hojin Sensei served as the precepts teacher during the week, and the attendant, Kian, was the attendant. So just that small gathering. And as I mentioned this morning in Open Sozan, it was reflecting last night in the feeling of that ceremony and its antiquity. The aspects of it, the forms, the liturgy, feels to me very ancient. It is. I mean, it goes back hundreds and hundreds of years. In fact, in the Kichimyaku that Gokan created, when a person does Jikai, we give the Jikai student a Kichimyaku, which is a blood lineage, which begins with the Buddha and then goes through the lineage that we chant when we chant our lineage on alternate Sundays. And then on the Jikai Kichimyaku, it includes the Jikai student. So they are now part of that family of Bodhisattva precepts holders. And in the bottom corner of that, there's a passage that's not translated from its kanji, but it's a quote from Dogen of when he went to see Chuching. And that's written on the bottom of the Kichimyaku that Gokan received. And it basically says that in 1225, that Dogen was spoken to by Chuching about the precepts that had been transmitted from, starting from the Buddha, a Shaolin monastery, to sixth ancestor Dongshan, and down now to the present. And I thought of that yesterday, that it's 2025, it's 800 years since that time. Dogen was 25 after that time when he had traveled to China. Think about what each of us had done when we were 25, right? He had already completed training in the Linji school. He got on a boat, went to China, traveled, found his teacher, and was receiving the transmission. And so I was thinking of the three treasures, and Dogen speaks of them so nicely here, as having been authentically transmitted. And what that means is that to have been transmitted is that they have reverence, that without taking refuge, there is no reverence. Without reverence, there's no taking refuge. And that it's achieved through mutual affinity and interaction. And that whatever realm we're in, and he lists a few, easy ones and hard ones, that when we have mutual affinity and interaction with Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, we can take refuge in them. Which is saying, no matter what situation we're in, no matter who we're in the midst of, no matter what the circumstances, we can always take refuge. No one can keep that from you. And to take refuge is to have reverence, which we need to look at a little bit. I was thinking of how in the Buddha, yes, this morning, I guess in Open Sozan, I talked a little bit about the vehicle of Buddha Dharma, right? We practice within the Mahayana, the tradition, the Mahayana vehicle of Buddha Dharma. And that when the Buddha came to awakening, to his enlightenment, and spent some days there at Bodh Gaya, reflecting, considering whether to teach or not, deciding he would, and then thinking who would be open, who would be able to hear this teaching. And he thought of his two previous teachers, both of whom had died. And then he thought of the ascetics, the band of ascetics that he had practiced with for some years. And those were his first students. And I thought of him going to them and teaching. And that then they could have said, thank you very much, that was grand. And then they left. But they didn't. They stayed with him. They became students. They studied. They asked for more. They knew there was more. The Buddha certainly knew there was more for them to realize. But they knew that, and so they stayed. They stayed close. They became the first students. And that through the course of his life, that kept happening. Without that, we wouldn't be here. There would be no vehicle. There would be no sutras. We would not know of the Buddha. He would have made an impact in his own time. People might have come to him, received his wisdom, maybe had their lives transformed with insight in those moments, and then they would have gone back and done whatever they do, and he would just continue to live his wandering life. But because people gathered around him, because there was Sangha, there was the development, the beginning development of a vehicle. And because people were gathering, the Buddha had to think about that. And it's like, okay, how's that going to work? He supported himself by begging. So everybody has to beg. What are the rules? How is this gathering collection of people, of practitioners, going to gather together harmoniously? How are they going to gather in such a way that they stay on the path? He has to make clear what is the path. Then there have to be ways of recognizing when a person is on the path and when they're not. When they're acting in ways or living in ways that are conducive to the path and when they're not. And so this, what we speak of as a vehicle, I think of as sort of forming in this very just day-to-day, natural, we might think of organic way. He doesn't say that he, upon his enlightenment, decided, okay, I'm now going to establish a school that 2,500 years from now somebody's going to be talking about in Mount Trumper, New York, right? He just continued. He continued his life as a seeker and now as a wisdom holder, meeting the needs of others who came to him and felt some mutual affinity and interacted. They interacted with him, with the teachings, with each other. Dogen says, taking refuge in the three treasures, you nurture yourself wherever you are Birth after birth, world after world, you accumulate merit, you assemble virtue and attain unsurpassable, complete enlightenment. Even if you're misled by unwholesome friends, obstructed by demons, cut off from your wholesome roots, and become an Acchantika. An Acchantika is someone who is so has such a base and sort of spiritually impoverished, deluded nature that they're considered almost impossible to come to enlightenment, given over to total hedonism. But he says, even if you're an Acchantika, in the end you will regain your wholesome roots and increase merit. The power of taking refuge in the three treasures will never decay. And that's all true because a person has taken refuge. He's not saying that just happens for anybody. He's saying when we take refuge, and it's, which means it's, and remember, it's based in reverence, so it's sincere. That's why our vow, our commitment as practitioners, is to make what we do real. Real in the sense of from your heart, sincere, wholehearted. Not just going through motions, not just mouthing words, not just doing what others are doing around us. Which means we have to come close, we have to examine, we have to engage, we have to interact. Reverence is a deep respect. To have reverence is deep respect. It's not being sanctimonious. Right? It's not an idea. It's not creating a holy sense of self or investing that sense of holiness in something else that is not a truth, but is just an idea. It's not that. It's a deep respect. And deep respect means respecting something for what it is, for who you are. That's the respect. And it's encouraged by the teachings and our teachers. We are encouraged to cultivate reverence. In my early training, coming across that word, I was like, whoa, because I couldn't hear it except as something that was sanctimonious, as something that was, you know, higher than, holier than. It did not appeal to me in that way of thinking. I didn't understand it. To take refuge is to rely on things. We all rely on things to live. Food, water, shelter, our parents, our friends, economies, governments. That's why when those things become unstable, unreliable, it's so unsettling. Because we do actually rely on things in our life to make life work and make it good. We rely on farmers, teachers, mechanics, plumbers. Thank God for the plumbers. If you've ever had a backed up toilet, right? And then we rely on deeper things. What are the essential things that we need to rely on? That's what the Buddha Dharma is teaching. Mutual interaction and affinity. This is why we must practice in this way. In this way. It's why just knowing about the Dharma, reading about the Dharma, is not taking refuge. It's not yet the path. There has to be interaction with Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha so that there can be an experience of mutual affinity interaction. That's how I know, that's how you can know whether this is your path or not. And if that isn't there or it's incipient, it doesn't feel very strong, maybe that's just what it is right now. But if a person continues, there's something mutually that is happening. There is some interaction that's happening. And so we practice to bring that into our awareness, to have it be a felt experience of something within your body, within your mind, within your senses, your awareness, your emotions. We make contact. Right? We make contact. When we are not in contact, there is no reverence. We cannot take refuge. Things become objects. Objects are distant. We cannot care. We cannot really care about something when it's an object in our mind. There are many objects in the world that we use and rely upon and enjoy. But if they become only an object, then we cannot care about them. And that's what happens, right? When something ceases to be cared about or becomes such an object that there is no caring, then we get rid of it, right? Or what we do that has consequence to that object doesn't matter to us because it's not in our circle of caring. And so to be in this hall, to be practicing Sesshin in this morning with others, to be interacting with yourself, your own practice, your mind, but with people in front of you, beside you, with this hall, with the altar, with the sounds, the smells, coming into the senses. And of course, this can happen anywhere, and it's intended to happen anywhere. It's intended to happen everywhere. The mutual affinity interaction, the world comes alive anytime, anywhere, when the mind has reverence, has deep respect. Dogen says, initiate this vow, aspiring for enlightenment, the fruit of Buddhahood. Even though your body mind is born and dies moment by moment, your Dharma body grows and attains enlightenment. And then Dogen says, taking refuge in means returning and relying upon. And of course, that requires faith. If you're going to rely on something, then you want to make sure it's trustworthy. It's worthy of that reliance, which means we need to sift through our expectations and projections about what we think it is. That's part of deeply respecting. He says, returning is like children running to their parents. Relying upon is like citizens relying upon a wise ruler. Where are they? This phrase implies that you are liberated by doing so. You take refuge in Buddha because he was a great master. You take refuge in the Dharma because it is good medicine. You take refuge in Sangha because they are excellent friends. And so Gokhan has received the priestly transmission, which is the Kai, the precepts, the Bodhisattva precepts, which the Buddha said are unified with wisdom and compassion. They cannot be separated. There can be no practice of Buddha Dharma without the practice of the precepts, without ceasing from harm and practicing good. There can be no wisdom that is separate from compassion or compassion that is separate from wisdom. Our penchant for compartmentalizing, putting things in categories and trying to keep them neat and separate, works for socks and underwear. Right. The precepts are the Buddha treasure. They were first taught by Shakyamuni, realized by him, embodied by him. The precepts are the Dharma treasure. They are teachings. They're the essence of the path. They are the path itself. There is no path apart from this. The precepts are the Sangha treasure. They are what we rely upon to make peace with the many beings within us and outside of us. The precepts recognize all the ways, the Buddha Dharma recognizes all the ways that we can manifest ourselves as human beings, as devils and demons, as wise ones and sages. And they never exclude. Right? You never get kicked out of the house because you've gone too far. You can get kicked out of this house. Other houses, right? There have to be limits and boundaries. But the Buddha Dharma, if it were such a thing, will never kick out anyone from their house because it has no walls. And by virtue of that, it understands you and me. And how easy delusion is. How easy our attachments are. So they recognize all the ways in which we can create harm and never forsake us for that. But at the same time, they demand, if we are going to be practitioners, that we not indulge those harmful ways. That we study them carefully, that we release ourselves, that we take compassion seriously, and that we believe in our own capacity. And what is so beautiful about these teachings is that presenting in such clarity these teachings that we practice, we take up, we interact with, we take vows in, and that the basis of that is not attachment. They are not something that you could actually hold on to. They don't exist somewhere. They are not fixed things. In the Prajnaparamita Sutra, the student asks, how does a seeker set out on the bodhisattva path? And the Buddha says, one does not seize on a self or a being or a living soul or a person. You do not seize on annihilationist views. Don't be a nihilist or eternalist views. Don't think everything is permanent forever. Don't attach to notions of appearances, how they appear. Don't settle down in your skandhas, in your senses. The Buddha says, one does not settle down in views which regard the Buddha as a refuge, or regard the Dharma as a refuge, or regard the Sangha as a refuge, or regard morality as a refuge. Does he contradict Dogen? He's saying, do not settle down in such a view. Take refuge, but do not settle down in such a view. That's where it becomes sanctimonious. That's where it becomes a dogma. That's where you become right and somebody else becomes wrong. You're inside and they're outside. And now we have a problem. So the Buddha is saying, do not, a bodhisattva does not do that. They take refuge with their whole body and mind without settling down. Isn't that wonderful? Isn't that good medicine? Isn't that medicine that sometimes seems in all too short supply? It's easy to feel passionate about something that you believe in, to respect it, to have reverence for it. But these teachers are saying true reverence, true respect means taking refuge, which means do not settle down. Do not create a fixed idea. Gold dust in your eyes will blind you. So with Denkai, Gokhan is in our lineage. Now we speak of as a priest. In many Zen communities, being ordained is people are referred to as priests. But in Dadaroshi wanted to, in forming a monastery, wanted to have monastics who live their our lives as monastics, a complete and perfect life, a wonderful, most wondrous life. You should try it. And if training and conditions and various things are in place, then a person can enter into Denkai, receive priestly training, which is in our lineage to become a priest, and then perform, take on the responsibility, so be empowered to, through the use of liturgy, through ceremonies, and newborn welcoming ceremonies, marriages, jukai, weddings, funerals, to be a teacher, to begin really training in teaching, not to have received Dharma transmission yet, which is to fully be a teacher and to take students, but to be in a teaching role. And this is such a wonderful, I feel like invaluable kind of training where a person is step by step gradually sort of oozing into these various stages, right? Rather than being thrust. The monks studied a book, I think, by Julie Diamond years ago on power. And mostly it was couched within sort of a corporate context, but we applied it to our own training. And one of the things she said was when a person is put into a new role, they're not ready. They've never done it. So in that sense, they're not ready. But if they are qualified, then they are ready in the sense that they're ready to assume that role and then discover what that role actually is. And so to have time to do that, I think it is immeasurably important, particularly because of what's at stake. You, us, the Dharma. And so he will continue to work in that way. He actively, as does Shōhan Osho, sit on the teacher's council, help to guide and lead the Sangha. And I wanted to invite you to speak a few words, but I'll prime it on Monday or maybe Tuesday morning. No, on Monday, one of the first things that happens is the student requests to receive Denkai. And I said to Gokhan, I said, you know, we ask to become a student. We ask to receive Jikai, students who want to receive the Bodhisattva precepts. And those things don't happen unless the student asks, so it's wholly appropriate that they ask. A person asks to come into residency. In a sense, you ask to come here each time you come, by virtue of your coming. But it would be really inappropriate for a student to ask to become chief disciple, for instance. In fact, there's a section in the Zuimonki where I think Ajo asks Dogen, and Ajo was one of his closest disciples, if he could be chief disciple. And Dogen went, oh my God. Don't say that. He didn't actually say it quite like that. Or it would be not appropriate for a student to say, I want to be a teacher. Why would that not be appropriate? Because it would almost certainly be driven by ego clinging. The idea that this is something, this is power, this is something, you know, rank, title, whatever. And so I said to Gokhan, so given all of that, why is it that now, so I gave him what we call the first given kitigami, which is the intention to transmit the Dharma some years ago. And then at a certain point, I said, okay, now it's time to do Denkai. We set a date. So I established that. But then, to begin the process, he has to ask. Shōhan had to ask. Hojin asked. I had to ask. Why? I asked him. And you offered some words, some response to that. And I said, carry that with you into the week. Reflect on that. Isn't that interesting? And so, what are your thoughts on that? And any other thoughts you'd like to share about this week?
That's not what I was going to talk about. But in a way, maybe it is. You know, it feels like I didn't ask for this. I haven't. I just wanted to be a monk and practice. And as I've been over these last few years doing more teaching and being asked to do more teaching, I've been seeing how that has been just a continued opened up doors in my own practice, and so that I continue to ask for, you know, I thought that I would talk a little bit about reverence and devotion, and I'm not sure I have much to add to what Shugen Roshi and Dogen had to say, but that was a lot of what this week was. I did a lot of prostrations. I made a lot of offerings. And it feels like that is a kind of live opening place in my practice experience. How devotion is reverence brings me is a way to come close, is a way to come inside. Maybe it's just a way of sort of putting words on what's always true from the beginning. And Zazen is an act of devotion, of reverence, turning inside, turning towards, getting closer. And I also wanted to express gratitude for my teachers. Dada Roshi was in the room with me, my first teacher. And you know, I was thinking that his when I think of him as when I speak to him, thank him, what sort of feels most clear is his trust in Buddha nature, and that is what he offered, sort of what was most clear for me. And I was also thinking how, though Dido truly was my first teacher and was my teacher, that Shugen Roshi has also have always been my teacher. He was one of the things that I was doing this week was copying some teachings, documents that that he had copied. And so they have a date on them, and he was just becoming a teacher when I was starting to practice here. And his example of devoted practice and continued practice and monastic practice. I also wanted to thank Hojin Sensei for her example, practice. Thank you.
Well, I can say with great confidence that Dada Roshi would have an inexpressible feeling of gratitude and appreciation for this day. I've mentioned before that in the very, very early years, where there are hardly any seniors, Dada Roshi did everything. He was already thinking about when he would not be here. He was already preparing. Because he loved the Buddha Dharma, because he wanted this to be a place where people could practice for as long as people want to practice, he was actively working on ensuring the continuity, the longevity, and the good health of the Dharma here, and the Buddha, and the Sangha, way before any of us even wanted to think about it, the possibility of his not being here. That was his love. And so he would be delighted. This is how the vehicle crosses over. Dogen said, many of you are fearful of suffering and take refuge in mountains, gardens, forests, trees, shrines. This refuge is neither excellent nor valuable. You cannot be liberated from suffering by taking refuge in them. I would say that all of those places are places, can be places of solace. I find solace in them. But what he's talking about is taking refuge. He says, on the other hand, if you take refuge in Buddha and if you take refuge in Dharma and Sangha, you can always abide within the Four Noble Truths, the teachings. And with this wisdom, you always observe and understand suffering and the arising of suffering. That's what the Buddha said over and over. He said, my teaching is about the cause and the cessation of suffering. That. He was always clear about that. And he was clear when people wanted it to be about something else. He said, this is what it's about. We can know and understand the suffering that arises and know how to go beyond it for ourselves and to see it in others and countries and people and to understand, because with that understanding, that is wisdom. And with that wisdom comes compassion. Dogen says, you know the Eightfold Path. This refuge is the most excellent and most valuable of all because it goes to the heart, because it addresses, allows us, rather, to address everything, because it's about the nature of things. So, I'll end with a simple poem. But first, I wanted to express my gratitude to you and to Hojin Osho and to Shoan Osho, the monastics, and all of you. We cannot do this without us, right? It seems obvious, but because us keep showing up, it's easy to forget that. We can forget how rare, actually, and precious this is. Not precious in a sanctimonious sense, but in a sense of deserving deep respect and reverence to be taken care of. And that's what we do with our blessed lives. In deepest winter, cold winds blow across a frozen landscape. On the ancient tree, a red bud stirs. Even now, the endless spring is here.
Thank you for listening. To find out more about ZMM's programs, retreats, and residency, please visit us online at zmm.org.